Hello, I am Anika Orok, author of The Incredible Women of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, and you are listening to the fabulous Baseball and Barbecue podcast with Jeff and Len.
Music's podcast, and you're listening to Jeff and Len on Baseball and Barbecue, one of my favorite podcasts, and I know it's one of yours too. The only problem is, after I get done listening to it, I'm hungry. All right, guys, take it away. Episode 82 of Baseball and Barbecue. Oh, yeah. There's nothing like opening up episode 82 with the King of Darkness or the Prince of Darkness or whatever they called him, Ozzy Osbourne. I am Leonard Aberman, and I am here with my Prince of Darkness or your Prince of Darkness or whatever, Jeff Cohen.
Darkness. Well, thank you, Mr. Darkness there, Leonard. How are you?
I love surprising you with the different intros. I like seeing
you. I'm not like seeing your face.
Oh, come on. You know what? There's nothing that gets you excited, like gets the blood coursing through the veins like that. This is episode 82. This is, I guess, another bonus episode.
Another bonus. It's going to be a short one today. A short episode.
Short but powerful.
Exactly. And it's only dedicated to baseball. So no barbecue on this episode. We are talking about the Negro Leagues and Hinchcliffe Stadium. And we talked to a historian, Brian Lopinto.
Even though there is no barbecue on this episode, don't tune it out. All right? Listen to it and enjoy it because Brian Lopinto has a lot to say and he's really a fantastic guy. We had a great time talking to him, so you should definitely stay with us. Don't leave us. We did the heavy lifting. All you have to do is listen.
Yes, and Brian is very involved with the restoration of Hinchcliffe Stadium in Paterson, New Jersey, which was home to the New York Black Yankees, the Newark Eagles, the New York Cubans, and really the home field of Hall of Famer Larry Doby. And some of the great, great ball players have played in Hinchcliffe Stadium, including Josh Gibson. I believe Satchel Paige also pitched there. So this is a great stadium that they're trying to restore to its old glory.
And Jeff, there's a few things before we get to Brian. There are a few things that I want to make sure we get to. First, I'd like to send a shout out to an old friend of mine. It's been many years since I've seen him. Thankfully, due to Facebook, we've been able to reconnect. He is a big fan of the show. He's a huge baseball fan. Loves the Cincinnati Reds. His name is Tom Flynn. Shout out to Tom Flynn. Jeff, could you give me your famous shout out?
Tom Flynn!
There we go. So Tom, I want to thank you for listening and just say, hey, Tom. All right.
Tom wants to call, or anybody else who wants to call the show, give us a call at 516-855-8214. Email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Tweet us. We're at baseballandbbq. We have an Instagram account, baseballandbarbecue. Barbecue is all spelled out. And we have, check us out our YouTube videos. And our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com.
And Jeff, one other thing.
Yes.
We have some fantastic companies that we have had on the show. One of them is baseballbbq.com. They have incredible grilling tools. They're the grilling tools with the handles that are shaped like baseball bats. They've got spatulas. They've got the forks. They've got gear like hats and shirts. And you got to check them out. They are really great. Go to their website, gifts, birthday, anniversary, whatever. Check them out. And the other company that I want to say is fifthandcherry.com for their cutting boards, beautiful cutting boards. Check them out. And of course, we encourage you to go to the Pandemic Baseball Book Club, purchase their books, purchase some of their swag, help the authors out. I wanted to just bring that up. And then Jeff, we did have an untimely passing of a baseball Hall of Famer, baseball great. And why don't you just give us a little tribute to him?
Yes, Tom Elsota was a great ambassador to the game of baseball. He bled Dodger blue. And if anybody thinks that was an act, it wasn't. He loved Dodgers. He turned down offers from other teams to manage him, multiple year deals. He turned them all down, stayed with the Dodgers with 1 year deals because he loved Dodgers. Do you know he was at that last game in the World Series? So his last game he ever saw was the Dodgers winning the World Series. He won two World Series as manager in 1981. Happened to be a shortened season. And also in 1988, we all remember the Kirk Gibson home run. But he was he managed the World Baseball Classic USA. He was a coach on many All-Star teams, and he was just a fantastic ambassador to the game of baseball, and he will be missed.
And if you want to hear more about Tommy Lasorda, we had on Jason Turnbaugh, who wrote the book, They Bled Blue.
They Bled Blue.
They Bled Blue. And in it, there's some amazing, read the book, listen to our interview with him. I forget what episode that was, Jeff.
And go on YouTube and search Tommy Lasorda if you like some colorful language, because he could definitely use that language.
But what episode was that?
It was episode 75.
75. Really, that was, you know what? We missed out on interviewing him. We had a long time when we first started this podcast, we had Chris Epting on. Turns out Chris Epting was close with Tommy Lasorda. And when we found out, we approached him. But at that time, Tommy Lasorda was older, wasn't giving interviews, certainly wasn't giving interviews to a fledgling podcast. But, you know, it's too bad. I would have really liked to speak to him. He loved the game of baseball. And you're right, he did bleed Dodger blue. And just, he seemed just like such a nice guy. But anyway, we send our condolences to his family.
Yes, we do. And with that, let's get to our interview with Brian Lopinto.
Some of our listeners may feel that fate brought us our next guest. And maybe it's a bit of fate, or maybe just being in the right place at the right time. But we learned of our next guest in a Zoom presentation on the Negro Leagues, which featured friend of the show and president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, Bob Kendrick. Hinchcliffe Stadium is a 10,000-seat stadium located in Paterson, New Jersey, and whose construction ended in 1932, and then its true place in baseball history took place. It's been designated as a National Historic Landmark, and our guest can tell us all the details as to why this is a wonderful historical place worth saving, as he serves as president of the Friends of Hinchcliffe Stadium. This is a cause which Baseball and BBQ hopes to help, and we are thrilled, absolutely thrilled, to welcome Brian Lopinto to Baseball and Barbecue. Brian, welcome.
Jeff, Leonard, thank you so much for inviting me and having me on your program. I really appreciate it.
So, Brian, I'm going to jump right in. I want to get to your background and how you got involved with all of this. But first of all, give us, I'm sure we're going to talk about this the whole time, but give us a basic background of Hinchcliffe Stadium and the history that makes it such a valuable landmark.
Sure. Well, first, I definitely want to make sure to mention that Hinchcliffe Stadium is one of the last remaining Negro League stadiums in the country. It's the only National Historic Landmark that honors baseball. And it's also the only sporting venue within the boundaries of a national park. So to say it has national significance is actually an understatement. As you mentioned earlier, the stadium opened in 1932. It opened in July of that year. So we were able to see some semblance of baseball toward the latter part of the summer. And there were some white baseball teams playing there, the Patterson Pros. Very unique name, right? The Patterson Pros, and then the City Club also played. But one thing that the sports promoters noticed in that first half season, that because the stadium opened in July of that year, as well as all of 1933, is that the sports promoters noticed that when African-American teams would play at Hinchcliffe Stadium, the attendance was higher. And I think that's simply because of the quality of play. Because in my research, I was very interested to find out, well, who were going to these games? And it turned out the 1930 census had African-Americans at only 2.1% of the population. So I think that's very telling about Patterson as a whole and Hinchcliffe Stadium and why it was so special. Just because, you know, a lot of times you kind of wonder who were going to Negro League games. And I think Patterson had a very unique set of circumstances because it was always a city of immigrants. So that's a little something there. Just to, let's take you to 1933 and that transition from the Negro League teams being the visiting ball club to becoming the home team. So in 1933, this is at the end of the season, there was something that was referred to in the media as the Colored Championship of the Nation. Now, it isn't technically a Negro League World Series. I don't know if it was something that was formalized, but that took place between the New York Black Yankees, as serving as the home team, and the Pittsburgh Crawfords. And this was a series that went between Patterson and Pittsburgh. And, you know, unfortunately, because of the time, things were not formulaic in the Negro Leagues. So this series actually took a longer period of time than we would be used to for what would be a seven-game series or a best of seven. So what interesting things happened during that time is that during that stretch of that series, there were some gaps. So to kind of keep things going, the local promoters in Patterson decided to schedule a game with the Philadelphia Stars. So very strange that you would schedule a game in the middle of what is a championship. But that's what they did. Turn out that that game ended up getting rained out. So the long and short, then, the series with the Pittsburgh Crawfords continues, and the New York Black Yankees win. So now those that are the promoters in town feel like they have a pretty hot hand. They have a hot ticket, the New York Black Yankees. Say, remember that game against the Philadelphia Stars? Well, why don't we reschedule that? So then they rescheduled that as a one-game winner-take-all for the Colored Championship of the Nation. Unfortunately, Philadelphia won. I think it was like 14-6. So the New York Black Yankees were kind of champions for like 2 weeks or something like that. So that's one of kind of like the unique details of not only Hinchcliffe Stadium, but how the Negro Leagues kind of operated, but not really operated, just kind of just how it played out, because really they're just trying to play as many games as possible, especially when you're talking about a relatively young stadium. They're trying to get as many events there as possible. But that series with both Pittsburgh and Philadelphia really springboarded the New York Black Yankees in 1934 to be the home team on a semi-regular basis. Things were going well, and they stayed there for a long period of time.
Now, they weren't the only considered home team for Hinchcliffe Stadium. There's also the New York Cubans also played there.
Yes, correct. The New York Cubans played part of 1935 and a very large part of 1936 at Hinchcliffe Stadium. In fact, they were very popular in Patterson, so popular that during the 1936 season, they went on a West Coast swing. Now, how far west can you really go? I think probably Kansas City, right? So to make sure that the local fans still had their baseball, they actually worked out a deal with a team called the Mohawk Giants. The Mohawk Giants are a team based in the Albany, New York area. Not to disrespect them at all, but they're more like a little bit of a lower grade team. Think of it as like if they were to be a minor league within the Negro Leagues. So they were a very good team, but they weren't in the upper echelon of like your New York Black Yankees, the New York Cubans, and New York Eagles. Speaking of the Newark Eagles, they also played home games there as well. And they played that. I'm not sure exactly the reasoning, but remember, they were sharing a stadium with the Newark Bears of the International League, the New York Yankees AAA team. So obviously there might have been some scheduling conflicts. Patterson being rather close to Newark, I think that was an obvious
sure.
There. So,
sure.
Now, Brian, you know, when in history, when you go to these places, these old homes and things like that, and it says Washington slept here, or you know, so Hinchcliffe Stadium has had some pretty significant people. Now, they didn't sleep there, but they certainly played there. And so I'm going to ask you to name some of the players that have played there, the Hall of Famers, as well as entertainers that have played, that have performed there. So give us some background on who's actually performed there.
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously you want to talk about some of the greats of the game, right? So Josh Gibson, he actually hit a home run in 1934 against the New York Black Yankees to end their 8-game winning streak. And of course, Pittsburgh not being so far, he actually played rather often there with the Pittsburgh Crawfords. Of course, there's cool Papa Bell when you think about the Pittsburgh Crawfords, Oscar Charleston, Judy Johnson. So these are players that play there for sure. Going back to the New York Cubans, Martin DeHigo. Man is enshrined in not one, but five different halls of fames around the world. And he took the hill at Hinchcliffe Stadium. There's a player named Elmer McDuffie, little less known, but he was a great pitcher in the Negro Leagues. He pitched for the New York Black Yankees and the Newark Eagles, not in baseball's Hall of Fame, but certainly a guy who deserves a little more recognition. In fact, he pitched a no-hitter in 1935 against the House of David. I want to talk about two very important guys, Monty Irvin and Larry Doby.
Right.
And they're important not only because of who they are as ballplayers, but how Hinchcliffe Stadium is really a big part of their respective lives and collective lives, because they were teammates with the Newark Eagles. So we'll start with Monty Irvin. 1937, he's invited to a tryout at Hinchcliffe Stadium with the Newark Eagles and, of course, makes the team. Go now, fast forward to 1942. Larry Doby, who's from Paterson, New Jersey, who was from Eastside High School. He lettered in four sports, baseball, of course, football, basketball, and track. So Larry Doby tries out for the Negro Leagues. Now, this is 1942. He's just graduated high school. He's a young man. And the way the story goes is there's an umpire in the Negro Leagues named Henry Moore. Henry Moore, of course, being an umpire in the Negro Leagues, had developed a nice relationship with Abe Manley, Abe being the owner of the Newark Eagles. So I can almost imagine a conversation that goes to the effect of, well, you know, Abe, you're going to be up in Paterson playing the Black Yankees. Why don't you take a look at this kid, Doby? And you might surmise, well, maybe as a Negro League umpire, perhaps he officiated some high school games, maybe saw him play in person. So this umpire is very key to Larry Doby's life. Of course, he tries out for the Negro Leagues in 1942, does amazingly in typical Larry Doby form, and makes the Newark Eagles. He plays the rest of the summer with the Eagles under an assumed name, Larry Walker. So I guess in theory, there are two Larry Walkers in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, he maintained that amateur standing because he could have gone to college. He had the opportunity to play basketball in college. In fact, he played professional basketball for a short period of time as well. But Larry Doby, and talking about like your comment about George Washington slept here, well, with Larry Doby, I feel like with him, he is synonymous with Hinchcliffe Stadium. I think every great historic site has a champion, has a hero, has that historic figure that's synonymous. It's right next to the Great Falls within that national park. Alexander Hamilton is that for the national park and for the Great Falls. Larry Doby is that for Hinchcliffe Stadium.
Wow. It wasn't just made for baseball. You had actually entertainers there. And another New Jerseyan, I think from Paterson, played there, and that was Lou Costello.
That's right. So Lou Costello, another proud Pattersonian, another favorite son of Paterson. Yeah, he performed at Hinchcliffe Stadium. A lot of times it was actually before boxing matches. Lou Costello was a big boxing fan, and they would be a part of those routines, of that entertainment, of kind of getting the crowd warmed up. Joe Louis actually was a guest referee at Hinchcliffe Stadium for boxing matches. In fact, Johnny Vandermeer, you might remember Johnny Vandermeer, he's from local nearby, I believe it's Midland Park. The man who pitched two no-hitters back-to-back, the last guy probably to ever do that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
When he was in town, the Cincinnati Reds, to play the New York Giants, he brought some of his teammates over to Hinchcliffe Stadium to watch boxing. It was a great boxing venue at that time, and a lot of people went there. You may have heard of a fellow named Babe Ruth. He was at Hinchcliffe Stadium to watch boxing. In fact, I had seen there's a ticket out there somewhere, a beautiful boxing ticket in the shape of a glove that's autographed by Babe Ruth. Boy, I'd love to have my hands on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. Luke Costello is a big person. Duke Ellington actually performed one of the last concerts of his life there in 1971. He was on a bill with Tito Puente and Vaughn Monroe. Sly and the Family Stone performed there as well. Tina Turner as well. So those are some pretty good names that had performed there from a musical aspect.
Wow. Hinchcliffe Stadium, not just baseball and concerts and boxing, but football also.
That's right. Sure.
Who was Hinchcliffe, and how did it get this name?
Sure. So that is named more for the family, supposedly. So at the time that Hinchcliffe Stadium opened, 1932, the mayor was John V. Hinchcliffe. And to be clear, it was actually referred to as City Stadium when it first opened. So it didn't receive the Hinchcliffe name till I think 1934. But when asked, you know, is this named for him? Well, he said, well, no. He said, it's really named for my uncle, who also served as mayor during like 1903 in that time. And there was a huge great flood and the great fire that really impacted the city. And he was a big person that really helped the city get through those times. So John V. Hinchcliffe decided to say, no, that's for my uncle John, who's also, you know, named John. That was really for him. But the Hinchcliffe family, they were big brewers in town. So the Hinchcliffe Brewers, a very big business in town. So I wouldn't be surprised if Hinchcliffe beer was served at Hinchcliffe Stadium.
So, Brian, tell us a little bit about your background, mm-hmm. how you got involved with this.
Well, for me, it's rather simple. I was born and raised in Patterson. I grew up about two blocks away from Hinchcliffe Stadium and I have a great affinity for the game of baseball. I think if you took any one of those elements out of the picture, I'm probably not speaking to you right now. I think all those three components were big factors for me to really take an interest in the stadium and do my own independent research to really be able to speak, you know, knowledgeably about the stadium and explain to people why it's so important. So that's what I've spent my time doing over the years and really kind of speaking to folks like yourself and anybody who's willing to listen so that we can move the stadium forward.
I've seen a lot of articles. I don't know where the construction stands.
Sometimes I don't either.
We try and steer away from any kind of politics on this show,
sure,
or controversy, but I did see there was some controversy surrounding it, the stadium, because it's such an investment that needs to go into it to restore it. And there were some people, some politicians or whatever, that felt that the return on the investment would not be justified. So I don't know, you know, where that stands. Is construction heading, going forward, and mm-hmm. that's the controversies all over with? Where do we stand?
I would say we are hopefully almost out of the controversy. As it stands today, and of course I have to preface by saying I'll believe it when I see it, because remember, Hinchcliffe Stadium closed in 1997. A person born in 1997 would be graduating college right about now. So that gives you kind of some perspective as to how long it's taken. And that's typical Patterson, quite frankly. It's like molasses. So where it stands now, and my understanding is, supposedly construction starts this fall. According to my calendar, that's September 21st this fall. So hopefully it will be starting soon. We'll see. I mean, I'm definitely going to keep tabs on that and, you know, really kind of keep my pulse on the subject matter. And the goal is that the stadium is to be opened at some point in the year 2022. Most likely it would be nice if it was July of that year to kind of have that symmetry. That might be very interesting, but that is currently the plan as it stands today. I hope that's the case.
I see it. I saw a news story recently. It's part of an overall project where you have income housing, restaurants, kind of revitalize the whole place.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, remember, this is within the boundaries of a national park. You have so many people that are visiting national parks. I mean, let's face it, the national park brand is very strong. They do a great job with interpreting history and the different sites they have around the country. So we're so glad that Patterson is a national park city. But when people go to the national park, at least in recent years, really, I mean, yeah, they take a walk. They might spend a few minutes there, but the goal really should be is to keep that active audience there. I think you keep them there by having an active Hinchcliffe Stadium, by having, hopefully, maybe a Negro Leagues Museum annex, having an event space or restaurant space. I personally believe like something like a food hall would work well. I think that they have that a lot in New York City, not a food court like in a mall, but like a food hall where you have some really great food, some really great beer, some really great barbecue. Am I right, folks? That's right. So if I could wave a magic wand, there'd be a brewery right behind Hinchcliffe Stadium. There's some old mills that would be very good over there. So you really do have to have more than just a stadium. And you folks know that if you've traveled to the stadiums recently, whether it's major league or minor league, what they've done in Atlanta, that should be the business model for almost any sporting venue, where you have live space, workspace, entertainment space, and the ballpark. And I think that's where you really create this destination, this neighborhood, this one-stop shopping for everything. I think that can happen in Patterson on a smaller scale, but only time will tell.
So Brian, we put this podcast out. We have some very loyal listeners. I mean, we could tell that because, you know, technology being what it is now, you could see where people listen. And, sure. You know, we get these areas where people listen, and we consistently get these areas. Our listeners are growing, and we don't get behind something that we don't believe in. We don't promote products that we don't believe in. And we love baseball history.
That's great.
Our listeners love baseball history. That's one of the reasons they listen to this show.
Right.
So we want to come in and we want to help to get this, you know, whether, you know, continue it, add to it. So where are we coming in, and what can we do, and how can our listeners, if they want to donate, if they want to learn more about this project,
sure.
How do they do that?
Well, here's the situation. As I mentioned, it appears as though the stadium is on its way. That's and as a side note, that's through tax credits, which is just fine. And the situation with that, though, is I'm trying to remind people why Hinchcliffe Stadium has the opportunity for these tax credits, why it has the opportunity to have a second life. It's because of the Negro Leagues. It's because of the African-American history component at Hinchcliffe Stadium. If you look at pictures of Hinchcliffe Stadium, and I invite people to do that, Hinchcliffe Stadium resembles the Major League Park most. People ask me that question, which one it is. It's the Polo Grounds. It's a horseshoe-style stadium with a baseball diamond on one end, on the lower end of the horseshoe. Well, to me, if that's where the Negro Leagues players played, then home plate needs to be returned to that location. The current plan doesn't call for that. They're going to have it at the location where it's been since 1963, which puts left field at about 500 feet and right field at about 200 or so. That's not good for competitive use. So why even do that? You're better off having like the Polo Grounds, something in the, dare I say, ballpark of 280 down the line in a deep center field. And I thought, well, if the Polo Grounds were good enough for Willie Mays, well, I'm pretty sure Hinchcliffe Stadium could be good enough for anybody.
Do you need money?
Well, I think the stadium is in the position where the developers are going to be taking care of that financial piece. I will tell you that over the years, it's been very difficult to try to get people to invest in Hinchcliffe Stadium because of the ownership piece. It's owned by the Patterson Public Schools since 1963. And quite frankly, you know, it's difficult to justify donating money to a school district that pretty much neglected their property. So that's been the big struggle over the years. You know, our role in all of this was we're being advocates and we're grant writing. But as far as fundraising, it's difficult to do when there is an entity that really just did not care for the stadium, and there's also mismanagement. It was also operated by the state of New Jersey. So there's a lot of moving parts that would let people say, I don't think this is going to be the project for us. So I think this is the only option. So something is better than nothing. I would have preferred a national RFP. But I think what maybe you folks and maybe your listeners can consider, and maybe we can partner on this, is really kind of beating that drum saying, home plate does need to return, where over 20 Hall of Famers played, many of whom played in the Negro Leagues. I just ask you just for a moment, just imagine this one thing. Imagine a young African-American ball player from Eastside or Kennedy High School, the two schools in town, standing in the same batter's box as Larry Doby, the local hero. And if the coaches properly explain that and teach that, that's invaluable. And when you think about historic sites, it is the intangible value that is so important. And it's also better for competitive play. It's really sad that those that really are rather indifferent, and unfortunately, Patterson's current mayor made a comment to that effect recently. I read he said that it didn't matter to him where the baseball diamond was, but yet he constantly bandies about the Negro League history. He's brought on Harold Reynolds, a great ball player, one that I admire as an ambassador. His father, I think, was a bat boy in the Negro Leagues. That makes him a great ambassador for the stadium. But I'm hopeful that we can all rally together and say, you know what? Let's do the right thing. Let's put home plate where it belongs. And it's something very symbolic. And there's something nice about coming home, right? So in some ways, these Negro League players get to come home by having home plate returned to its proper location, not only for historic perspectives, but also for a baseball competitive use. I mean, imagine a situation. You guys might remember New Jersey rarely had minor leagues many years ago. Then we were inundated. Now we've lost teams in Newark. We've lost teams in Atlantic City, Kansas City, Sussex County. Now we have one back there again.
Mm-hmm.
Team at Yogi Berra Stadium in Little Falls, which is near Patterson. Imagine once a year they play a game against their rival, the Sussex County Miners, and they wear the Negro League uniforms. That's what they do at Rickwood Field in Birmingham, Alabama. Patterson should want to be like Rickwood. And I think for whatever reason, there's hesitation to try to emulate other communities. But you know what? I think sometimes you have to learn from the best. And I think those are the best. And then going back to my comment about minor leagues, I think what could be a good business model at Hinsdale Stadium might be the college wood bat league formula, like similar to Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously Cape Cod is the best, but I think that could work because again, you don't have to pay the players and it still has that minor league feel.
The high school, you say it's owned by, it's used by Patterson High School or schools there? Do they have
public schools, right?
So high school championships, I don't know, little leagues maybe, is that going to be part of the use going forward?
Well, I hope that baseball will be part of that use. I think they have to really accept the fact that having the student athletes play there is going to be very important, not only to the individual athletes, but just to the messaging of this very important place in Patterson. So yeah, that is the hope. But let's also be understanding of the fact that in order for Hinchcliffe Stadium to be sustainable, you have to have revenue generating events come in there.
Sure.
I think they really need to understand that or else, I mean, high school baseball typically is free. So you're not really going to charge for that. High school football, maybe you charge a few dollars. That's not going to sustain a stadium that in 2022 will be 90 years old.
Right.
Yes, you're going to rehabilitate it, but let's make sure it doesn't go back to the way it was as far as the dilapidated state is.
Right. You know, you mentioned go see some pictures. Definitely Google Hinchcliffe Stadium. There's plenty of pictures on there, and you can see how it was back in the day when it was used back in the 30s. You can tell, where the home plate was at one end. Yeah, it looks terrific.
And that's what I'm trying to express, is that with that aerial that you're seeing right now. I'm sorry I don't have it available for me here. I don't know if you can get it on there, and I'm not sure how it really works. But I will say that is where heroes played. That's where Hall of Famers played. You have to go back and bring it to there, because if you start bringing people for tours of Hinchcliffe Stadium and you don't have the correct diamond out, they're going to say, well, is this where the Negro Leagues went? No, they played somewhere else. Well, what do you mean they played somewhere else? You know, you have to be accurate. And I think, again, returning it, even if someone is not history-minded, at least from a competitive standpoint, it's a lot more palatable to have short lines and a longer center field versus 500 to left and right.
Well, Brian, so what is, other than us going in at night under cover of darkness and moving the bases around, doing our own work on the field, what is stopping the home plate from going where it should be? And then also, tell us about the website you have for Friends of Hinchcliffe. So
sure. Yeah. So first, talking about, you know, where the issue is, my understanding is for whatever reason, See, they're trying to put too much into Hinchcliffe Stadium. They have, you know, part of the renderings is on the opposite end is putting a softball field there, which is all well and good. They're trying to maximize it, but I think they're doing too much. They're putting a track at Hinchcliffe Stadium that would not even be high school regulation. So now if you put a track that doesn't have high school regulation and a baseball field, then what are you really doing? I don't know if they're going to go away from the track idea. They probably won't. But I think it's really this lack of understanding. And unfortunately, it's still owned by the Patterson Public Schools, so they still have a say in it. Unfortunately, it should be owned by the city, quite frankly, because the city, you know, let's put it this way. The school district has one responsibility. That's to educate students. A municipality covers a lot of different areas for a city. And some of those areas would be historic preservation, economic development, and community development, all of which touches Hinchcliffe Stadium. So the city of Patterson should really be the owners. But not certain why, but this current mayor refuses to incorporate the abandoned properties ordinance. The stadium has been abandoned for 23 years. In fact, the school district dumped snow into the stadium, which, you know, you think about all the contaminants that are in snow just so that they can have their buses be picked up. It's like, if the stadium was active, where would you put that snow, right? I mean, now they park buses in there. They park trailers in there. They weren't really treating it like the national historic landmark that it is.
Right.
So, but yet again, it's, you know, I know you said not to really go too much into the politics, but unfortunately when it's owned by a public entity of politics with the Board of Education, you have the city council, you have with the mayor and even the State Office of Historic Preservation to a degree from years ago. So it's a tough deal. I think we're getting toward a better place. I'll keep saying it again, though. I'll believe it when I see it.
How has Bob Kendrick's involvement been involved?
Well, let me tell you, Bob Kendrick has been a great sounding board over the years. Reached out to him via email many years and had always been very responsive and always very interested in knowing and learning about what's going on with Hinchcliffe, and as well as his colleague, Dr. Doswell. Always wanted to hear about what the latest was invited to come to Patterson when the National Historic Landmark plaque was presented. And we appeared, as you mentioned recently, with New Jersey City University. His enthusiasm is just contagious. It really is. I mean, I can tell you, I've been so jaded about the Hinchcliffe Stadium project over the years, but, you know, kind of kept going. But at the end of the day, you know, it's Bob and others that have that kind of enthusiasm to make you kind of keep going. So certainly always great to talk to Bob, and we're hopeful that he would consider Hinchcliffe Stadium to be a Negro Leagues Museum annex. They're already building space for interpretive area, and I think that's half the battle. So if the building's going to be built, maybe they come in with that interpretive piece, partner with the Park Service. I think that would make a great partnership there. I think they would welcome the Negro Leagues Museum and vice versa. And imagine that, a Negro Leagues Museum annex at a Negro League Museum within the boundaries of a national park. I mean, I think it doesn't get any better than that.
Right.
And I know you have a website, where people can learn more about it.
Yeah. We've had some issues with the website lately. I'm not a web person. I'm actually going to probably partner with someone to help with that. Friends of Hinchcliffe Stadium. I'm sorry. It's hinchcliffestadium.org. So there's still some information available on there. There's also friendsofhinchcliffestadium.net that my colleague, Dr. Flavia Laya, was trying to create as well, just to have as an alternate site, just for something a little different. But those are areas you can look at as well. I recommend also doing some research on articles that have been written over the years, which you can find with a Google search, and maybe even seeing not only this, you know, share this with other friends, what we're doing today, and also hopefully New Jersey City University puts out a link to what Bob Kendrick and I did recently.
And I should also say there's a great article on the Sabre website on Hinchcliffe Stadium. So that was that's a good resource as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, those folks really understand that, the importance of that history. I know that they have a Negro Leagues portion within Sabre. Oh, I was at one of their annual meetings in Newark a few years ago and spoke there. Great group of folks that really, really have that great interest. And that's what's important about keeping that information alive and available to people. But I think the most important thing is really teaching young folks. And I think that's where I hope that the Patterson Public Schools, at least at the local level, can teach about its local Negro League facility, because I think that's going to be very helpful for kids locally to really understand that what their town was and how great Hinchcliffe Stadium was as a Negro League venue. And I think we have to, as people who engage with young people, just share those stories. You know, you start them young and then they learn about it and then it becomes contagious.
Hinchcliffe Stadium has a Wikipedia page. So if it has a Wikipedia page, you know it's
on. It does. I may have put some entries in there myself. Haven't seen it recently, so I have to double check to see what the accuracy is. But absolutely, there's some interesting information there, especially I'll throw a little something you might want to be interested in seeing: the controversy of the National Register of Historic Places designation. That was a big blunder back in 2004 that actually cost Hinchcliffe Stadium some money through the Save America's Treasures program. So there's been a lot of stumbling blocks for Hinchcliffe, but it is a remarkable survivor of neglect.
I would just say also, I saw a New York Times article on the stadium. So
yep.
A lot of information out there. A lot of information on the web, so check it out.
Hinchcliffe Stadium.
I'm looking at right now a poster of Hinchcliffe Stadium, New York Black Yankees and New York Cubans. It's terrific.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean,
actually, it's the one behind you.
Oh, yeah. That's that one there. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's Larry Doby. That's actually a great poster that actually the National Park Service put out. And the National Park Service, they have been great partners. Just a little hello to Darren Bach, who's the superintendent over there. Elise, she does a great job. They're partners in all of this. I think Richie as well. At the end of the day, you know, the National Park Service, their role in this is to interpret Hinchcliffe Stadium's history. Unfortunately, the stadium was not involved within the first designation of the park. It had to actually go through an act of Congress, literally. So we're grateful to Bill Pascrell to force the issue and to make sure that Hinchcliffe Stadium was included within the boundaries of a national park. I'm really glad. I still think it should have been there since day one, but I think that ownership piece was something that was a little bit of concern for the National Park Service, but still, I think it should have been there since day one, but it's there now, and we're glad. And then this hat, too, that's part of the National Park Service. We're glad for that, the mug as well, so I think these are things that are very important to help put that history out there. We need all hands on deck for sure.
Well, we're ready to assist in any way we can.
That's so great.
You know where to find us.
I think we should really, you know, offline, we should maybe think about, I don't know how petitions really work or if they even get any leverage, but you never know. If we get enough names out there, then that becomes a news item. Then maybe that forces the issue. And maybe you got to embarrass people a little bit here, because it should be a no-brainer that that home plate where Doby and Josh Gibson and Oscar Charleston, Cool Papa Bell, and you name it, played there. Roy Campanella actually played there, believe it or not. Young Roy Campanella, age 19.
Wow.
Unfortunately, every at-bat he struck out. But, hey, he's not, you know, he's probably really nervous up against some great ball players. Yeah, I think that's the next step in this movement, because again, the stadium seems to be on its way, which we're really happy and grateful for. Which again, I'll believe when I see it. But now is the time to really make sure that they get it right. And right. I cannot stress enough: home plate has to return to its rightful location.
Well, Hinchcliffe is, as you said, one of five remaining Negro League stadiums. Save Hinchcliffe, Brian. We really appreciate you coming on with us. And we will here help you any way we can.
That would be great to continue this conversation with you guys, you know, offline, and let's keep this going. And maybe we can have another show again where we're calling again and we're saying, hey, we were successful. We got them to do the right thing. That home plate has returned to Hinchcliffe Stadium.
You got it. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks,
Brian was amazing. I hope that stadium, that, you know, that's what they want, that they bring it back to its glory. We happened to go there after the interview. We went to Hinchcliffe Stadium.
We did. Check it out on YouTube.
Right. We posted things on YouTube. The stadium, it's sad when you go there. When you go there, you know, you can feel the history. You know, you look around, you can feel the history. But it's almost like when we were kids there was that commercial with the Native American on the horse, and he's, you know, as he's riding, he sees all the litter, and that tear comes out of his eye, right? Yeah. That's kind of how I felt when I was in Hinchcliffe Stadium, because it's in such, you know, disrepair, and it's such a beautiful part of history. So hopefully, if anyone's going to make it happen, it's going to be Brian. Hopefully they do.
And with that, we would like to thank you for joining us on this episode of Baseball and BBQ. We will be back next week with another episode. But until then, here is Baseball Always Brings You Home.
From the poet and the musician, Dave Dresser and Shel Krakowski. Thank you for listening.